Well, today I'm just checking out Steve Kirsch's Substack. So if you go to substack.com and you just search Steve Kirsch, so Steve, steveekirsch.substack.com, then he's got a lot of articles here, which I like to read every day. So he's got like Defeat the Mandates, and he's got one about the interviews with Steve Peters, and he's got another one called Five Nurses Speak Out About What's Really Going On in Hospitals. And he's got Troubling News from Germany and Washington. And he's got another one, Incriminating Evidence. So I think this is about the pandemic we're in. So I might just click on this one. I had a little read before. So Incriminating Evidence. Please ask your doctor to explain how we got it wrong. Oh, he's offering $5 million and $1 million for a debate with the health authorities. So they've collected a lot of evidence over the last year and a half, 2 years, about the response and a lot of corruption that's going on, a lot of misinformation. He's also put this is the dollar amount no one in the CDC, NIH or FDA want to discuss, even for $1 million. So he offered them $1 million to take a meeting. They would record it and go through all the events which have happened. So he goes on to say, I'm expanding my $1 million offer to members of the VRB PAC and ACIP, ACIP committees until the end of January 2022. So he goes on to say, in the hope of resolving these issues, I'm extending my offer until the end of January 2022, $1 million to have a recorded discussion with the committee members on each item in this article. So why not clear the air so that the American people can decide, or worldwide, can decide for themselves who is telling the truth? So I think he's talking about all the misinformation and suppression of early treatments and stuff like this. So those who refuse to consider the evidence put the entire future of medicine and healthcare in jeopardy, including their own careers. Why would a committee member refuse $1 million just to have a discussion on the science? As far as I know, you'd only refuse if you had something big that they wanted to hide. Example, that you are incompetent and make decisions about the safety of these vaccines. So let's go on to have a look. Well, Steve starts off at this article. He says that the most convincing evidence as people when we start seeing that family and friends get disabled or they die after the vaccine. And even famous people, what happens to them after they take the vaccine, that's when many people start asking questions about, which is happening now. So in Steve's case, he says he lost confidence in the COVID vaccines when a friend told him that three of her relatives died shortly after being vaccinated and they were all perfectly healthy beforehand. A week later, another friend had a heart attack 2 minutes after getting the vaccine, and his wife developed Parkinson's symptoms after she got her vaccine. And then today, his wife told him that one of her friends recently got boosted and now her four kids don't have a mother anymore. For most people, it takes many events like this before they wake up, which is happening a lot now. And it's a bit hard to accept that you've been lied to, especially when you have trust in your government and health public administrators and professionals. So in many cases, they're saying the victims remain silent because they don't want to be ostracized and receive death threats. So you rarely hear about these incidences. Also, the press will never cover the reactions because the media cannot prove the vaccine was the cause of the event. He goes on to say, people will eventually start to make the link between vaccination and sudden unexpected onset of neurological, cardiovascular, and immunological symptoms. So he goes on to say, such as number one, of course, is death, even death in your sleep. Number two is COVID infection. So many people are getting infected now, especially after wherever the vaccine goes, cases rise. Then we have number three, we have cardiac arrest. Four, pulmonary embolism. Then number five, intracranial hemorrhage. Number six, Bell's palsy. Number seven, Guillain-Barre disease. Number eight, peripheral neuropathy. Number nine, severe and persistent muscle spasms. Seen a lot of that. Number 10, menstrual issues, high flow, low flow, start-stop timing. Number 11, reemergence of latent disease such as cancers and shingles, etc. And 12 is worsening diabetes. It's actually where I am in Germany, the local hospital, the head of the local hospital, his wife was rushed to hospital because she had a booster in the ER. A lot of nurses are getting their boosters and they're having a lot of menstrual problems, so a lot of bleedings, and they're also even shortage of staff now because a lot of them are having problems. He goes on to say that a lot of these events, it's not really reported in the news. It's all hushed up, and the doctors are trying to say that it's not the vaccine. And he goes on to say a perfect example is Celine Dion shortly after she got vaccinated. So no one really noticed that the singer never announced the cause of her sudden uncontrolled muscle spasms. And he goes on to ask, did her agent ever tell the public why the vaccine was ruled out as a possible cause? So he hasn't heard this. He goes on to say, uncontrolled muscle spasms post-vaccination is a very common side effect of the vaccine, especially in women. It is possible that her injury was just bad luck, of course, but statistically it's more likely that her injury was caused by the jab. So, and he goes on to say, if she isn't treated by a specialist for vaccine injuries, then she may never return to singing or on the stage again. So very important to get treatment. So he goes on to say, as these unexpected events happen more and more, and then of people's friends and famous people, then people will start to maybe ask more questions. He also goes on to give another example with President Biden, who developed peripheral neuropathy after his booster, or that his physicians ruled out every other possible cause. So then we have a look at even in California, I think it was Governor Newsom. He developed Guillain-Barré within a few days of the booster, Steve Kerr said, because he had so many credible sources for the hypothesis. And he offered Governor Newsom $5 million to prove to the world that he was not vaccine injured by just giving him the list of doctors who treated him post-vaccination. But of course he refused, he said. He goes on to say that Newsom had nothing to lose if he wasn't vaccine injured. But it's pretty obvious to everyone that he was vaccine injured because he missed a climate conference for no good reason. He didn't give a really good reason why he missed it. Also, he said even though Governor Newsom didn't take up his offer, he was willing to give it to anyone else. So he asked if anyone else wanted to prove it. So he's also saying that the governor he thinks was vaccine injured, but nobody's talking about it. So why? And he's also saying that what is worse is that he wants to mandate it to all kids in California that they should get it, the same one that injured him. And then that also he will not vaccinate his own kids, apparently. I don't know where he got this information from. So he thinks that's very evil. Well, I think we all do. So what's another point that he's talking about? Part of the incriminating evidence. So the viral spread. So there is, he's saying there's no solid evidence of, number one, a symptomatic spread. Number two, spread of the virus when both parties are outdoors. And number three, a naturally recovered person getting reinfected and then infecting another person. So this is important because testing asymptomatic people is ridiculous. I think it just creates more to the fear campaign. And I think having the mandates that don't include or that don't exclude recovered patients is also a bit silly. And Steve said that nurses he's talked to say that they can basically treat on symptoms. So tests are not really needed at all. Okay, another point he goes on to is the lipid nanoparticle toxicity. So the lipid nanoparticle, these particles deliver the mRNA into the cells alone, have killed mice in studies. So he goes on to quote, we found that 80% of mice treated with 10 UG of LMP died in less than 24 hours. So the vaccine manufacturers have no interest in testing this further as they have no liability for any deaths. So there's also a study, PubMed study, lipid nanoparticles kills 80% of mice. So if you go onto the Substack, check out the article, then you can click on the link. Then he also talks about the next thing incriminating evidence is the spike protein. So as of January 16th, 2022, the CDC says that the spike protein that is produced by the COVID vaccines is harmless, but the scientific literature clearly shows that they are lying to the American public. And what is the proof it is harmless? How do they respond to the papers cited below? So if we can't trust them on something so basic, how can we trust them to tell us anything else? So he lists 7 papers here. So these papers are peer-reviewed, they're medical literature, and they clearly show that spike protein isn't harmless. And he asked the question, how does the CDC explain the discrepancy? So the first paper is beware of SARS-CoV-2 spike protein. There is more than meets the eye. And then the second one is toxicology insights in of spike fragments, SARS-CoV-2 to exposure environment, a threat to aquatic health. So there's seven papers there. If you click on them, you can have a look. Then he goes on to the topic of vaccine safety. If the CDC is correct and the vaccine is safe, how do they explain over 20,000 deaths reported in VERS worldwide in a year? This is unprecedented. It is more deaths in 1 year than all 70 vaccines combined over the past 30 years since VERS was created. So he says the CDC is supposed to investigate each one of these deaths to determine whether or not it was caused by the vaccine. Why are they not making these investigations public? This should be troubling to the Americans and also everyone around the world. Not a single death investigation has been made public. So zero for 20,000. That's stunning, he said. And the mainstream media, they aren't asking any questions about this. How can there not be a single news story or op-ed about this? Makes a good point. As far as anyone knows, the CDC has not done an autopsy on any patient who died after vaccination. Not a single one. Why not, he says. Then he goes on to say, how did Pfizer know that none of the deaths in the vaccine group were caused by vaccine? Why can't we see the in-depth analysis of these deaths? Why is it important that the analysis is kept private? We don't know because they won't tell us. So one of the world's top pathologists, Dr. Peter Schumacher, one of the world's most respected pathologists, 30 to 40% of the deaths after vaccination were due to the vaccine. And this is a bare minimum. It could be 100%. His results were independently confirmed by other German researchers who showed numbers as high as 93% of the deaths within 6 months after vaccination were caused by the vaccine itself. And there's a few links you can go to. I think that's the website. Yeah, so it's called www.pathologie-conference.de. So pathologie is pathologie-conference.de. Yeah, this is the website about the, has all the doctors there. Okay, so if you click on that link, then you go to that information. So then he goes on to point out the overall safety evidence is also troubling. So all of these references show that the vaccines are unsafe. So number one, he says vaccinated English adults over 60 are dying at twice the rate of unvaccinated people the same age. Another, since it is healthy patients who opt for the vaccine, it can't be explained by healthy patient bias. So this is a stunning observation, but taken alone, like most evidence, it is not definitive, sorry. So the second one is, it's not just English that people under 60 are dying at troubling double the rate. It's happening in the US too. The CEO of a big insurance company admitted a 40% increase in deaths in ages 18 to 64 after the vaccines rolled out. So that cannot happen by chance. Something is killing these people. If it isn't the vaccine, then what is it? It isn't COVID. They've ruled that out. The insurance company didn't track vaccination status. So let's say it is the vaccinated dying at double the rate of the unvaccinated. Then if around half the people are vaccinated, that can explain the results they got. It is consistent with the stats in England. The third point he makes is using 12 independent methods, only one of them using VERS, we can estimate that over 150,000 Americans have died from the vaccine in 2021. 150,000. Okay, the fourth point he makes is the number of significant vaccine adverse events are thousands more than the CDC will admit. So there are types of events, not rates. In other words, the CDC says there are only a few serious events like myocarditis, but VERS says there are thousands of different types of adverse events that are elevated by these vaccines. He goes on to myocarditis rates may be common, 1 in 100 teenage boys. This is more than 100 times higher than the CDC claims. They claim it's 1 in 13,000. So somebody is lying, he's saying. Then number 6, Pfizer's own study shows 24% more people died in the vaccine group than the placebo group. Risk-benefit analysis shows that the vaccines cannot be justified for any age range. They kill more people than they save for all age rates. There's a link. Click on the link. Then the eighth thing is, for young children, the risk-benefit is off the charts. The ages 5 to 11 will kill 117 kids for every child we might save. So definitely not recommended for children. So over 1,000 studies published in peer-reviewed medical journals say the vaccines are dangerous. Number 10, there's evidence that the vaccines have increased the incidence of prion's disease. I think I read an article on that too. Okay, number 11... we don't know what the long-term effects are. See, for example, MIT scientists there's a link here. COVID vaccines may cause disease in 10 to 15 years. I think that was already discussed more than a year ago when doctors were started to question things. Then number 12, Thailand experienced 33% drop in the number of births in 2021 compared to 2020. And this is interesting because you'd expect that lockdowns would have increased the number of births, not decreased them. And also in England, stopped tracking the same statistics in August 2021 for unknown reasons. Maybe they thought it was too boring. But actually, I heard about this. A few mothers have said that they've miscarried and having problems during pregnancies. Yes, I know a lot of people that are not registering as vaccine affected, but they're going from doctor to doctor to try and find out their neurological problem, orthopedist, physio. So there's a lot of people which are going doctor to doctor trying to find and get fixed, but they're all in the bit of denial as well, saying it's stress or something like this or work related. Okay, moving on. Vaccine safety, the new normal. So after the vaccines rolled out, odd events started happening on a regular basis that never happened before. How do they explain the new normal? So he goes on the list. So number one thing he says is over 10,000 black swan events post-vaccine documented in a separate tweet. So if the vaccine is so safe, how do all these black swans appear right after the vaccine? The second one is 60-time increase in intracranial infection. So these are deadly, if not caught early. Also, there's 13-year-olds dying from cardiac arrest. Young adults dying in their sleep after getting vaccinated. So there's a lot of links where you can go check this. 3-year-old dies from cardiac arrest just one day after getting the vaccine. 8-year-olds suffering from myocarditis. Unfortunately, Twitter removed a nurse, so you cannot see the tweets anymore. Yeah, so Twitter is deleting a lot of accounts where doctors and nurses are sharing some information or patient stories. But somebody had a screenshot here. So apparently this nurse had been a nurse for 14 years and she's never seen anything like what's happening now in her career. So she's saying that for the first time in my career, I took care of an 8-year-old boy with myocarditis in ER. Yeah, there's a little bit more information there. Then we've got a vaccine safety, brain hemorrhages. So he goes on to say, let's deep dive into one category of unusual events. How does the CDC explain all the reports of brain hemorrhages in young people who are with no head trauma? All of these cases have one thing in common. They happened shortly after the child took the jab. If these kids didn't die from the vaccine, then what's the most likely cause? Just four little examples here. So the first one is baby girl dies from brain hemorrhage 5 days after Pfizer vaccine. Grieving mother in Trinidad grieves over her son who got jabbed and within hours he's dead. He was bleeding. He was bleeding in his brain. Trinidad officials ignored her and encouraged everyone to get vaccinated. So there's a few more stories here. There's also the CDC did an in-depth investigation of the deaths of 12 to 17-year-olds after the vaccine. Two of the 14 kids died of intracranial hemorrhages. So this is usually unusual in kids. And he goes on to a little bit more of a story, but you can read that yourself. And the fourth point he makes is the VAERS database shows clearly that the intracranial hemorrhages are up by 79% or 79 times higher than baseline rates. Pulmonary embolism is up 954 times normal rates. Or baseline. So he's saying, how do they explain these deaths? Okay, next point he's making is vaccine safety. Deaths have been determined to be caused by the vaccine, yet the CDC claim to be still studying these cases. So he goes on to talk about Jacob Plinick, a 13-year-old from Minnesota. Then he talks about the son of Ernest Ramirez. And also there's an autopsy in a 26-year-old. Then he goes on to talk about the vaccine safety, excess deaths in the VAERS, that there's over 220,000 deaths reported in VAERS worldwide in the first year. Then he goes on to talk about vaccine efficacy. So he's got like a Harvard study here, German study, Denmark study, new big data studying of 145 countries showed COVID vaccines make things worse. So increased cases and increased deaths. So he's also got a lot of another German data. The sixth point is got 80% of COVID deaths in the UK are vaccinated. Then there's a Lancet study. 89% of new UK COVID cases among fully vaxxed. So he goes on to talk about some other issues there. Also at the end here, he's got Pfizer's own study shows that 220 million fully vaccinated people. So from their study, he thinks that they saved just 10,000 lives. So he's saying that we kill at least 15 people for every person we save. So it's like a reverse effect. Then he goes on to talk about this Denmark study, which was confirmed in an Israeli trial, which concluded that a fourth dose is not enough. So basically, they think that if you double vax and then triple boost someone, so five doses, this is incredible, unbelievable. There is no precedent for that. The Denmark study basically showed that the more you vaccinate, the easier it is for the virus to infect you. It's crystal clear. They can give you infinite doses and it will not matter. Things will get worse and worse on each dose, and officials will still think that the solution is more doses. Yeah, so he talks on about that a bit. So each dose is lowering your immune system. Then he talks about mask effectiveness. So the CDC knows damn well that the randomized trials are much more reliable than non-randomized trials. So when the randomized trials for cloth and surgical masks showed that they didn't work, the CDC simply ignored these trials and focused on confounded studies that supported their belief system. Then he goes on a few links here. Cloth and surgical masks appear to be completely useless against COVID. Then there's talking about N95 masks. If they're properly fitted, should provide better protection than cloth and surgical masks, but there is no real-world randomized studies to show this. But he talks about the intensive scientific literature establishes that wearing surgical masks and respirators do not reduce the risk of contracting a verified illness. Then he talks about why haven't we seen a single CDC official wearing a mask that actually provides adequate protection against COVID. Instead, we see them wearing protection that quality scientific studies have proven makes absolutely no difference. Then he's asking, you cannot ignore 32 randomized trials that show that ivermectin works and still not recommend it, while at the same time you have zero randomized trials for cloth and surgical masks that show they work and mandate wearing of such masks. So how do they explain that? Good questions. Then he talks about the 47 studies that show conventional masks don't work against viruses, and there's a link you can click on there. Then he finally talks about the school boards. So White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki applauded the county where her kids go to school for imposing a mask mandate. Alrighty, so he talks about a few governors and a few counties where they're mandating. Then he's talking about mask safety. Then he talks about mandate, masks, vaccine and masks. So it makes no sense to mandate a vaccine that kills more people than it saves. If the vaccine works, if the vaccines work, you don't need to mandate. If the vaccines don't work, you don't need a mandate. So number three, if the masks work, you don't need a mandate. If the masks don't work, you don't need a mandate. Then he's saying number four, mandating masks is nonsensical because all the randomized trials show they do nothing and there are 32 studies showing they are harmful. And also lockdowns. There is no evidence that lockdowns have been effective. Then he's got a link to read about that. Then he goes on to early treatment protocols. Bit of a discussion about that. Over 7,000 people have been treated with the Fareed Tyson early treatment protocol. There's a link for that. Also talks about fluvoxamine alone will reduce the risk of death from COVID 12 times. So it should be included in treatment protocols. However, it's a generic drug, so the FDA won't approve it, even if it works better and safer than the two drugs they did approve. Then he talks about censorship. So he says that the President of the United States has a list of people he wants censored. This is the first for America. Government-sponsored censorship. Then he's talking about some issues, some events which happened. So on January 13, Biden again called for companies to censor misinformation. Then he talks about what happens when the truth is suppressed. The most popular podcast in history, both Robert Malone and Peter McCullough interviews have over 50 million and 40 million views respectively, which are a new record. This is 50 times more than CNN gets. It certainly appears that America is interested in hearing information from a trusted news source. So why is the government so intent on censoring this information? Then he has a link to see this video starting at 9 minutes. Then he goes on to say, Robert Malone and I have been permanently banned from Twitter and LinkedIn, for example. So, however, for some odd reason, which I cannot explain, my Twitter account resurrected, but Malone's was not. Perhaps they want to let me tweet so they can put me in jail later for spreading misinformation. And he has a picture of Dr. Malone's account. Account suspended. Twitter suspends accounts which violate the Twitter rules. Yeah. Then he talks about fraud and malfeasance. So here are just a few examples of fraud and malfeasance. Number one, the drug companies have full liability protection. They cannot be sued if you die or are disabled. Why is the liability protection necessary if the vaccines are safe and effective? Is the CDC claims? I'm still baffled by this. The second is there is no stopping condition for the vaccine experiment. This is unheard of. We would kill 1 million kids and then they wouldn't stop it. The mainstream press never asked this question and they never will. I've asked members of Congress, but they refuse to answer. The FDA originally asked a court to allow them to release the Pfizer documents over 75 years. So we'll all be dead before we can see what they've injected us with. How is this in the public interest? Then he keeps on going to talk about the damage from the vaccines is irreversible. Once your child is dead, you cannot bring them back. Once you damage your heart or brain, it cannot be repaired. There's always going to be some problem. The vaccines were never properly tested by the FDA in animals. We don't even know the amount, distribution, and duration of the spike protein in primates. It was never measured. Basic measures of clotting and heart damage, D-dimer and troponin post-vaccine still are not known, probably because they know it was really bad and don't want anyone to know. Then he talks about he tried to contact and he wanted to record a video from someone from the FDA, CDC, NIH to explain the evidence in what he's talking about in this article. But they just claim he's wrong and they refuse to meet with him or anyone from his team. Next point is talking about the CDC told people that cloth and surgical masks work to protect them from COVID. They do not do such a thing. All the randomized trials for these masks and COVID show they had no statistical significant event. So this is why the CDC never references these studies, because they don't support their narrative. Then he goes on to talk about NIH, CDC, FDA, all unethically suppress early treatment. Also goes on to talk about the US government deliberately withheld monoclonal antibodies that some physicians believe could have saved hundreds of thousands of lives had they been aggressively made available and promoted. Then he talks about the Matty DeGarry, who was a participant in the Pfizer 12 to 15-year-old clinical trial. She's paralyzed, likely for life, and her paralysis was reported as abdominal pain by Pfizer. So had it been correctly reported, the drug wouldn't have been approved. So FDA Commissioner Jeanette Woodcock promised to investigate why Maddie's paralysis wasn't reported correctly in the Pfizer clinical trial, but Maddie's parents were never contacted by anyone from any agency looking to investigate the matter. So that's a very interesting one that came out. Also, the 10th point he makes is when you are vaccine injured, the NIH has no clue whatsoever for how to treat you to restore you to your health. But they do not disclose this to the public. The public still thinks the vaccines are perfectly safe. The 11th point he makes is John Hsu, the CDC's VAERS expert, reports numbers from VAERS. He never calculates the underreporting factor. He deliberately misleads everyone for failing to note that the true event rates are close to 100 times higher than he reports. Even worse is when the FDA is contacted by a former New York Times reporter who asks for the URF and the document showing the URF calculated, and the reporter is stonewalled and never given the response. This is critical since the URF is required in order to do even the most basic risk-benefit analysis. It is astonishing that neither the VRB PAC, PAC, nor ACIP, ACIP committee members never asked for this. They are corrupted as well. There is no excuse for this. The mainstream press isn't asking any questions on this as usual. Right, 12th point he makes is Pfizer claimed that all the deaths in the vaccine arm were not caused by the vaccine. So he goes on to talk a little bit about that. Then the 13th point, the FDA never took a serious look at the Pfizer trial. How can there be 5 times more dropouts in the treatment group versus placebo? This is statistically impossible. 311 versus 60. Those numbers should have been the same if the trial wasn't gamed. The Pfizer whistleblower admitted that the trial wasn't blinded. That's how they can accomplish this. Then there's a big table here. Just go on the website, stevekirsch.substack.com/p/incriminating-evidence. Then you can see that. Then he talks about the number 14, the population of the Pfizer trial was supposed to be representative of the US population, but these people were much healthier. They died at 1/5 the rate they were expected to die. And when they did die, Pfizer didn't really investigate the cause. 15th point. The CDC says that there is no safety signals from VRS for the mRNA COVID vaccines other than myocarditis. The VRS database is flashing red for thousands of adverse events, and the FDA CDC are ignoring all of them, including all the reasons that all the kids died in the 12 to 17 year old study, which included cardiac arrest, intracranial hemorrhage, and pulmonary embolism. Then he talks about point 16. CDC claims that nobody has died from the mRNA vaccines. They are lying. They know directly of many cases which have been brought to their attention, but they ignore them and they don't investigate them. Point 17. Brooke Jackson, who worked as a contractor on the Pfizer trial, also appalled by what she had observed, including the unblinding of personnel on what is supposed to be a double-blinded trial. She contacted the FDA in confidence and was surprised that the very next day she was fired. How is it possible if the FDA didn't leak info to Pfizer? So, another evidence they're working cahoots. And the 18th point he makes is, we still do not know the contents of each vaccine. It's illegal for anyone to have it analyzed. If there is nothing to hide, why can't we analyze it? What are in the vials? Then he goes on to tell about 100 things to fix the next pandemic. So he says he made a list of 100 things that should be fixed before the next pandemic. And he will publish that soon. So check out the Substack. He also says about a rational pandemic response, saying that none of the interventions that have been done were necessary. He says that we could have ended the pandemic in March 2020 had the CDC adopted one of the existing early treatment protocols, such as the Fauci-Tyson protocol. And there's some, you can go back and check out that. He also goes on to talk about all the data supporting their narrative. It's very fast now, falling short. Especially one of the key papers that support the official false narrative is the BARDA paper, which appeared in the New England Journal of Medicine, documenting a study done in Israel. It shows that the risks from the vaccine were minor compared to the risks from the virus. This is the fundamental to justifying the vaccines and is often cited by external committee members. So then he goes on to talk about this. It's unfair comparison since everyone has taken the vaccine, but not everyone will get COVID. So the paper compared absolute rates, assumes everyone gets COVID. So he's talking about what happens next. Well, he talks about the UK. Some doctors in the UK are starting to advise patients that the vaccines will be completely stopped. And there's a quote here by Dr. Asim Malhotra, cardiologist, UK. His tweet is, "My biggest fear now is that it's going to get violent. When the truth comes out, we must do all that we can to stop that and show compassion for those who got it very, very wrong. This is not individual failure, but that of a corrupted system that needs to be dismantled and rebuilt together." Then he's going on to finish the article. Do you have a doctor? Here's a simple test. If you have a good doctor, they'll tell you, number one, the vaccines are unsafe. Number two, cloth and surgical masks are useless to stop infection. Number three, ivermectin and fluvoxazine work. So to ask your doctor, talk with your school, city council members about a lot of these issues raised in this article. So you just go to stevekirsch.substack.com and then discuss these issues, talk about it, show the data. Many people are having friends and family that have injuries. So yeah, so go and check out this article I was reading today. Thought I'd share it with you and go check out Steve Kirsch. Substack.com